6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
You better run.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. My name is Alex.
And I'm Sydney.
And I'm Kirk.
And welcome back to the Lokiverse, a podcast dedicated to the show Loki, season two. And we have got ourselves a real doozy. We went back in time and season two, episode three, 1894. Those are your pick four numbers. And Kirk. 1893.
There you go.
I said 1892?
No, you said 94.
Because 94 was such a good year for me. 1994 was such a good year. I thought about it. So, Kirk, since you corrected me, first, you survived the Comic-Con, it sounds like, episode. Yep. We actually are getting it out on time. And since you were born in 1893, what does the title mean to you?
I think the significance is simply that it marks the birth of He Who Remains, or Kang, and that you know, that's the significance of that date, you know, that it's the day that he's really kind of put on the map, is starting his new transition from timely to, and it's not clear to me whether he's going to become Kang and then He Who Remains, or whether he become, this is He Who Remains.
Right.
An early variant. Yeah. What do you guys think?
I think it's the year that the Chicago World's Fair occurred. Yeah.
Could you be a little less,
digging deep on that one.
The R crack minions at the TVA hours for that.
Hey, I got other stuff to say.
The depths of the research involved in that one is pretty
intense. Obi's minions that aren't any did a lot of work on that to come up that it was the World's Fair. But that said, first off, what was your first take on the episode, Sydney? Like it, love it?
I thought it was phenomenal. I adored it. I've been waiting for years to have the questions that were answered in this episode answered. This is not a show that poses a bunch of questions and leaves them unanswered for seasons. And we all know what shows I'm talking about. not only does it answer them, it also poses new questions. And I really like that we're not losing any momentum. Yeah, I loved it.
And what about you, Kirk? I guess we could use Loki crowns. How many Loki crowns do you want to give it? 1 to 5.
1 to 5. I'm going to give it 4. 4 and a half crowns. Yeah, I enjoyed it. I loved it.
Is that good?
No, 5 would be good. Okay. It would be great.
5 would be a glorious.
4 is good. 4 is very good. I enjoyed the episode. I really loved getting some of the insight and answer to some of the stuff that we've been asking since season 1. It's great to all origin stories. I love, and I thought this was kind of that. They finally get Renslayer's situation as of the season, and I thought that was key. And there was tons and tons and tons missed minutes, the way that she was handled. There were things I absolutely loved about this episode. It just had a little less Loki, Mobius, buddy cop going for it than
it
usual,
did.
Which I understand. And it had to. There was so much they had to tell. They saved the Ravonna storyline and timely storyline until they could give it a good presentation. So, you know, something had to give. So that was the only thing that I didn't like it about it as much as the other ones.
I mean, they got to pay Rick Grimes, but since they finally gave Daryl all that money, he had to talk eventually. You know, they got to give other people a chance, you know?
Yeah,
I think you're right. No, I think you're right. There wasn't that much Loki. I mean, I liked the episode a lot. I think that there was a lot that was answered, and it was just nice to be in a different environment. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was kind of neat. And, once again, they went to a cold open, and I love how they introduced Miss Minutes, because Miss Minutes has a lot to answer for in this episode.
Yeah.
And I don't know who wants to take it first, Kirk or
Sydney. You go.
Sydney, what was your take on the cold open?
Well, again, like I did last week, I kind of want to walk through it a little bit. So we can talk about all of the parts. But so Renslayer comes through a time door. We learn that she's in 1868 Chicago, and we learn that this is the sacred timeline. So I immediately started doing a little bit of math. It was obviously 25 years before the World's Fair, which is where I expected us to arrive. And she's looking for someone, and it's Miss Minutes, and she finds her kind of in a barn.
Glowing orange.
Orange, yeah. Right.
Yeah. Well, everything else is sepia tone.
Yeah.
Yeah, the color was great on this episode.
Oh, wasn't it though?
Yeah.
So Ravonna's like, what am I doing here? I came here to meet somebody important. And Miss Minutes responds, the important person, the one at the end of the time, is the one who told me that we need to put this package in the window. And it was his plan meant to protect all of time. Why didn't he do it? He's dead. So anyways, they put this package in the window of a young boy's house, who is pouring liquid into like candle molds, and he's about 11. He picks up the package and it's wrapped in paper, and no shit, it's the fucking manual. That's when I texted you guys last night. I was like, holy shit. And then the intro credit music picks up, and I think it's one of the best cold opens I've ever seen. So I wanted to ask you guys what you thought the significance of him receiving the manual to the TVA is.
Well, I think that the it's becoming clear that as I think either both of you or one of you pointed out, that the TVA manual is kind of one of the linchpins of the entire season. You know what I mean? They're going to great lengths to make sure we know all about it, that we see it all the time. It's on everybody's desk in the TVA, or Boris created the whole thing. He wrote the whole thing. Now they're giving it to a young, timely. So yeah, I think it's clear through this open that manual is key to the whole plan that He Who Remain has for coming back into power, I guess. So that was my feeling. I think one of the most important elements of this open, though, was that, as you pointed out, the opening scene in 1868, where they bring the TVA manual to the young timely, is part of the sacred timeline. But when they show up in 1893 to pursue him 25 years later, it's now a branched timeline. And I think the significance of that is that if they had not given him the TVA manual, then nothing would have, that part of the timeline of the sacred time would have just continued. But by giving him that manual, at that point in time, they're creating a nexus event and a branching timeline. So that to me was a significant point of that cold open. I also, it was interesting too, it was funny that Loki and Mobius are standing underneath the window where they had put in or given the TVA manual to him 25 years earlier to Timely. And he says, is there any major figure that arises from here?
Yeah. You.
Yeah. Him. So, thought that was pretty cool. Well, your thoughts, Alex?
Yeah, no, I was going to say the first thing that I've noticed, yes, the obvious, the whole book and everything, but, and we're going to get into this. When I saw Miss Minutes, I'm like, she knows too much.
Yeah.
She's pulling the strings on this. Yeah. And she's pissing me off, like, in a way, just because she's been holding back to Renslayer the whole time. She's only been giving her enough to keep her going. And basically, she's pulling the strings. And it's really kind of interesting what ends up happening. How was it he who was it? Was it Kang that told her to do it, or was it really Miss Minutes?
I asked that question too. I was like, she said, well, he who remains told me to tell you to do this. And I'm like, bullshit, you know, you're making this up as you go.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of lying and deceit that's going on. You know what I mean?
It's not Loki this time.
Right.
The lying and deceit is actually one person that isn't lying and deceiving.
Right.
Okay, so Kirk, I love that you helped me out a second ago, because one of the questions that I have written down is Victor Timely, and as you pointed out, as a child, is existing on the sacred timeline. But what we know of why He Who Remains set up the sacred timeline was to make sure no variants of his arise. And I mean, even Miss Minutes says later that, you know, the He Who Remains will be a singular entity. But what you're saying is that he's kind of a Kang variant when he's a child, but it takes him becoming kind of aware of the TVA and developing like knowledge and becoming affiliated with it somehow that makes him a dangerous Kang variant, one worthy of pruning, and that's why it becomes a branch.
Right. And also the reason it can only happen this way at this time is because the TVA is in disarray.
Right.
So if he had not died at last season, being murdered by Sylvie and causing everything to start to fall apart at the TVA. And then also that, you know, this idea of, well, should we prune, should we not prune or whatever else. Then if everything had been the normal, and they gave that book to his young Timely, they would have come and branched. They would have pruned that timeline. So it's kind of like each thing has to happen the way it did for him to be able to develop into whether he's becoming Kang or He Who Remains. But if TVA is still working like it was, they would have come and pruned it, because that would have showed up on the next on the monitor.
Okay, so I was wondering if when He Who Remains died, and if this is a true story that He Who Remains dictated to Miss Minutes, if we think that this Victor Timely was the original version of He Who Remains. Are we going back in time to create He Who Remains, or is this a completely different variant of He Who Remains or Kang that can now be brought up to be the replacement for He Who Remains? Because I think,
well, I guess this is the question.
Go ahead.
No, this is the question that I have that is kind of popped in my mind. When you have two twins, nature versus nurture.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, just hear me out for a second. The Kang that we, or the Victor Timely that we met, was on the sacred timeline. So he is He Who Remains, correct?
I don't think so. I think that later.
My point being is, let's just go on the assumption that he, if she doesn't give him the book, he ends up being He Who Remains.
No, he ends up being whoever, you know, just an adult version.
Yeah, and nobody. Candlemaker.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. Nobody. So then, okay, that kind of busted my theory. But what I was going to say, what I was going to say is this: if the timeline was kept the way it was, Victor Timely would have kept going to become He Who Remains. But by giving him the book, he changed his stars and created this new branch to create a new He Who Remains that maybe Miss Minutes wants to control or fix the timeline in her eyes. So there's a lot of variant that goes on with this variant. It could go either way. He could be good or he could be bad. Does that make sense? Or
yeah, I do. It makes sense. It's confusing. But I think the other thing is coming back to the point about the lying, and it ties into what you're saying too, is that, you know, again, He Who Remains says that he was originally from the 31st century. He was a scientist in the 31st century. I think that's bullshit. And I think that He Who Remains is Victor Timely, and Victor Timely is a con man. Okay.
Right.
And that, you know, that they went to great lengths to show us that in this episode. He's conning everybody, you know, to make a living, I guess. And so, you know, and I think he's just much more sophisticated and developed at the end of season one and is conning the Lokis because he wants them to, you know, kill him so that this can all, you know, go back or unfold the way he wants it to. I don't think he created the TVA. I don't think he, I don't think he's the same Kang that did that. I think he has figured out how to gain control of it and win the multiversal war and then set it up so that it keeps repeating itself in this sacred timeline. And
that's the only way your theory works, because it's a paradox any other way. I do not think that Victor Timely was who He Who Remains, that was not the past He Who Remains experienced. He was not a candle maker in Chicago, etc. He Who Remains developed into that position from some other backstory. And now that he's dead, he, in my opinion, he needs a new replacement. So he's given Miss Minutes these instructions, or maybe she's helping pick. But when He Who Remains was trying to get out of his job, he was shopping for someone to replace him. And he found a bunch of Lokis who are con men. He's found another variant of himself who's a con man. I know he's not He Who Remains, because Miss Minutes says it like 5 times. She says that you're just like your others. You're smart like your others, like you've created so much. So I think that she's establishing that this is a brand new person and that she has met other versions of him throughout time. So I think that every time He Who Remains
dies, or
whichever one becomes He Who Remains, they're trying to break the cycle by identifying a new person.
But Sydney, I read that as she has seen the other variants, but that doesn't, I didn't read that he wasn't the variant. I thought that, again, I could be wrong, and I have no problem being wrong with this because this is so layered. I'm still trying to figure it out. But I thought that he was the original guy.
I mean, he definitely could be.
And that she's just pointing out that she's seen the different variants. That's all. I think she's also holding her cards to her vest really close, because there's people like us that are going to analyze every word that she says. But again, I could be totally off. So there's more to talk about than that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I go back and forth constantly. You know, I'm hung up right now on this whole thing about, you know, the original He Who Remains saying that he was from the 31st century and was a scientist, and which is the birth of Kang in the comics. And now we've got this birth of Kang from someone in 1863. You know, obviously it's a con. So then that makes me think the story of the 31st century guy is either totally a lie, or that's the original.
I always thought that the scientist in the 31st century was someone who identified the multiverse, which did cause a multiversal war, but he's not the one who rose up and put it all together into a sacred timeline.
Right.
That's He Who Remains, which is a very special personality.
He does say that is what happened, though, but I think you're right.
I think he said a variant of me. I do.
Right. In other words, it may not have been, I guess we're saying the same thing. In other words, he who remains is not actually that scientist from the 31st century.
Mm-hmm.
He right. implies that he is, but he's not.
Right.
He's another variant who figured out either how to do this or that this would solve the problem, you know, of all these Kangs and would leave him alone being in charge, you know?
Yeah, that's what I think. I mean, I think that we started this whole thing by talking about the cold open. And I think that the fact that the TVA manual just like shows up, I don't know. I thought we would be talking about OB because as soon as.
Yeah, what's at the last page?
Well, let's talk about OB.
Yeah, what's the last page of the book?
I think it's the first
Polaroid of OB.
I don't know why I'm arguing that. Right. Yeah. There's OB. And then as soon as we see the, as soon as we see the manual, like the intro music starts and it's absolutely fabulous. And then we see Casey and OB there in the like monitoring room. And I thought that was, I think it's telling us he's so important.
I have a silly question and I'm going to throw this out and it's probably completely and utterly wrong. Do you think OB is a variant of Kang?
I just can't get there. I feel like okay, no, but I feel like he still might even be above Kang, and that's ridiculous too. Like maybe, he who remains was the man behind the curtain for the time lizards. But I mean, is OB the man behind the curtain for all of these variants? He's important.
I don't know. And I think it's one of the greatest mysteries of the season. And I think it's a great question. And I think it's one of, if not the biggest mystery of this season, which, you know, hopefully we'll get an answer for, but there's never a guarantee. But, you know, what is Ouroboros' story? You know, was he there before the Kangs? Was he with the first King and helped create the TVA? Was he never, you know, is he who he says he is?
Well, this is what we know.
Else? Has he had his mind wiped? Because apparently that's a thing that they're doing at the TVA. You know, they've wiped the variant minds and of their past, which was interesting, too, because Kang does not demonstrate that ability to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But Sylvie does. Yeah.
Mic drop. So, what? Good point.
Yeah. So that just keep that in mind. So I don't know what OB's story is, but he clearly has been there since the beginning.
Seems like it.
Well, this is all we know. OB was important at one point. He wrote the TVA manual.
Right.
He got put in a purgatory, for lack of a better term. Miss Minutes took over his job, basically.
Right. He got replaced.
He got replaced.
Right.
And
which is, again, to me, that's more evidence that he who remains was not the original creator of the TVA.
Mm-hmm.
That he's simply figured out how to, you know, as a con man, to, you know, snow everybody, get out, you know, and figured out how to build this thing or create this sacred timeline so that they could, you know, just keep going forever and ever like this and not have Kangs. But that he didn't actually create it. Plus, he's pretty fucking stupid.
Okay.
Right? No, the Victor Timely. I mean, he's not that, you know, he's creating only stuff that he's basically getting from the TVA manual. His
I think it's
going to
be a big help.
Yeah. I don't know.
I think some of that's an act, but I can't tell where
that
it starts and
too.
Where it
that
ends.
I mean, he made the loom.
He made the expander portion of the loom, and I don't even know why he knew he needed
to
make
again,
that.
Yeah, but again, that was in the manual, wasn't it? I mean,
not the expander part. That's what OB needs. I think OB's orchestrating all of this is kind of what I'm saying, because OB is standing there in this scene, and he's saying, you know, we're all going to die. Well, can't you just hack in? Because he can't get into that room. He can't get the computer to open the blast doors to get to the thing. We're all going to die. That's kind of manipulation. You kind of sound dumb. But are you, or do you want certain parties back in this room? And by saying you need Miss Minutes or you need, he never says he needs he who remains, but he does want Miss Minutes back.
He does say he needs he remains because of his aura, but what was it called?
His temporal aura, temporal but he says aura, he's yeah. dead. I guess he doesn't mention bringing back a variant. That is an idea they don't have until they meet Victor
True.
Timely himself.
True.
They're there like,
point.
Let's go find Miss Minutes. And he says very clearly, I need the expander for the temporal loom. The temporal loom needs to literally be wider so that more strands can feed through it. And that's the piece that he's missing. And who created that piece? Victor Timely did. That was the contribution he had upon receiving this orange notebook, which had plenty of information in it. He decided to draw the expander piece. And now they're going to bring him back and he's going to serve like a double function, opening the doors and, I don't know, changing the width of the like loom opening for them.
Right. I also thought it was interesting that he holds up that device when they get back to his lab and he says it's his life's work. And it looks to me very much like the probability drive that he has in Quantumania that is broken and he needs Janet Van Dyne's help to fix it or whatever. And it ends up being the device that sucks him in at the end. And I don't think kills him, but it's implied that he's killed. But I don't think that's actually what happens at the end of Quantumania. Spoilers. Oops. I thought that was kind of interesting. You know, that device is becoming key to his. And it's also got all the rings that rotate around. And
yeah. So is that what he's supposed to put on the timeline to make on the loom to make it pull in more timelines?
I don't think so. I think it at least in Quantumania, it's the device that powers his time chair thing, that allows him to go through back and forth in time, which is essentially what the pad that Sylvie now has does. So right. Maybe it's an early version of that or something. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so after we learn that there have been like two hits on Ravona Renslayer's temp pad, and one of them is in 1868 and one's in 1893 Chicago, they go to both. The first one's kind of a dud because they can't figure it out. And then the next one is the World's Fair, and that's where we see that that's a branch timeline. And Mobius kind of sets us up. He says, oh, I can't believe I didn't think of it. The White City. Edison, H.H. Holmes, hot air balloons. So they realize there's a purpose to them being there kind of early and now. I wrote that the arch is beautiful, all of the individual white bulbs. I love the coat of arms, which are like country flags. I love how many extras there are and all of the costumes there, but they don't know what to do next. And so they start with a little good old fashioned legwork.
I saw someone on one of the, I think it was on Screen Crush, and I didn't do the research to check it out, but supposedly one of the flags, the one right to the left of the US flag is of Latvia. I think it's, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right or not, but that's the fictional country that Dr. Doom is the leader of.
Oh,
which so is kind of cool. Yeah, it's kind of a cool. Well, and also Dr. Doom plays a big part in Secret Wars, which is going to be the end of this eventual storyline.
So yeah.
That's kind of cool.
So they don't know where to start. Go ahead.
Since we're talking about they're showing up at that fair, I just want to point out that Mobius is dressed like a common man. Yeah. And Loki is once again dressed like upper class suit. He's got a timepiece hanging off of his vest. He's got a formal necktie on instead of just a regular tie. It's green, which of course is cool, Loki. And then it's got a gold necktie pin on it. So you get his black, green, gold color combination. Also, again, nice. He's always got this more, you know, showy.
He looks smart.
Yeah, he looks suave, you know what I mean?
So British. No, I'm glad you said that. I actually wrote down, I like Owen's outfit better, just particularly in this one. But I mean, I guess everyone can appreciate Loki's because later on, Timely says, well, how about that wizard gentleman and his butler? So you're not the only person to have noticed that difference.
Right. Which is interesting because he was kind of the wizard at the end of time last season. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. As he remains. Uh-huh. Yeah. So that's kind of a funny little juxtaposition there.
So I have like literal history notes about the Chicago World's Fair because I really like it. And I like read this biography of Tesla once, and I had to go back and look this up to make sure it was true, but it absolutely is. So like we hear Edison's name dropped a couple of times in this episode because it's like the dawn of electricity and things like that. But there's actually a story that I really loved from that book, where both Edison's General Electric and then Westinghouse Electric that Tesla worked for bid to provide the electricity to the World's Fair. And Edison, you know, came in, Tesla came in lower, Edison went lower, and like Tesla laughed. Tesla said, fine, I'll do it for $399,000. And Edison said, well, I can't do that. And the reason is because Edison had the DC current, direct current, and then Tesla had alternating current, which is just like cheaper and more effective energy. And so it was a huge success for Tesla and Westinghouse. And they, as a like result, they put those little white bulbs all over all 14 main buildings and probably like the front entryway and all of that stuff, which we saw all of those. And there was like a electricity building like that was completely devoted to electrical exhibits. And you have to think about, there are like 27 million people who came to this fair over 6 months. And these people didn't have electricity in their homes. I mean, let alone millions and billions of white bulbs. So I just wanted to give Tesla his due because I enjoyed that story.
Why do you think they didn't mention Tesla, but mentioned his competitor there?
I think it's just Edison. Because it's easier. Edison,
I thought he said Edison and Tesla, but I guess I missed it.
I don't think there was any mention of Tesla.
Edison twice. I think it's because we do associate the, I mean, it's a problem with history. It's been written by the winner, and the winner was Edison, and he was a better businessman. And so they just don't give Tesla the credit he deserves. I mean, he was like a gambler. He died poor.
Yeah, but they're doing a lot of debt. But then Marvel's doing that, perpetuating that, even though they know otherwise.
That's a good point. I think it's easier on the audience just to just say electricity, Edison. We all think of the light bulb as Edison.
Do you think there's the possibility that they couldn't say Tesla because of the car?
Yeah, sure, maybe. I don't know.
But no, it's a public figure. He's a historical figure.
Yeah, but I would think they could say his full name.
Yeah.
If they just say Tesla, that might be an issue.
I mean, that'd be so one more fucked up thing from Elon Musk if he made it so that history can't remember an amazing inventor. That's but I don't know if that was the reason. I think it was just
That guy's a bad guy. That guy's like kind of Edison, evil guy.
He's Edison. He's a good businessman. He steals ideas from others, yet he makes huge businesses that like make technological advances.
A good businessman.
And then he
All I know is I used to live in Edison, New Jersey, and my power is very expensive, so let's just move on.
It's a direct current. So the other thing that is brought up by Mobius is H.H. Holmes, and he was like one of the world's first serial killers, and he was using the fair to lure people to his hotel, which he called the castle, and he killed like, I think it was like dozens. I read that book over a decade ago, but there's definitely some uneasy stuff going on in the background of this fair.
Well, there was a couple of new rock stars did their review, and in their review, they pointed out that there were a number of figures in the background at different points in that scene where he does his demonstration, and then afterwards, or when they're walking around and all that crowd inside the demonstration, that looked like the guy, the murderer guy.
Oh, my God.
As if they were like to put him there. And then in the newspaper that they opened up, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Sorry. I was just excited that you said it. Right. Over on the right, it said the World's Fair Hotel, which is not what Holmes called his hotel, but they were absolutely trying to bring our attention to it.
And did you see what was right below it?
I don't think I could see.
It was an ad for life insurance.
Holy shit.
Oh, my God. That's great.
Good laughs.
Marvel. Good job. My last note is that the Ferris wheel was designed for the World's Fair, and that the director of the fair, he wanted something that would rival the Eiffel Tower. They came up with this, but I think that they were trying to build the like first roller coaster, and then they couldn't pull it off. And so
the Ferris wheel is much more significant. I think first of all, it's a circular device. Mm-hmm. So it's another Ouroboros, right? You end up at the beginning. And then also you're in these carts that are on there. So you're kind of stuck in your little timeline.
Oh, nice.
On the sacred timeline, you know, you can't really deviate from that. You have to stay inside your box, you know? So it's kind of a visual symbol for the sacred timeline and for Ouroboros. I love how Loki now, I don't know if you noticed, my wife caught this, when he gets ready to fire, you know, or to use his power, his hands expand out. You know, he does this on both hands, and there's this green glow as if he's like charging or getting, it's like he's getting his guns out. You know what I mean? It's like,
I think Sylvie was kind of doing that too. And they were standing off across from each other. Yeah. They both kind of had their hands flat, like parallel to the ground. And it was kind of building.
I think what they're calling it, I think I read it online, it's green balls.
Take a shot.
No, but the one thing I do want to bring up in that whole scene was when they showed Thor. And they had to.
My favorite scene. My favorite for a number of reasons. They're looking at the Asgardian exhibit. They got the sculptures out front of the three. I guess it's Thor, Odin, and Baldur. Now, Baldur is the brave, is Thor's best friend in the comics. They're like brothers, but he hasn't yet made it into the movies, which is really, really. I don't understand it all. I have read that I guess they had offered the role to Daniel Craig to play Baldur and have him sit on the Illuminati of Universe 838 in Multiverse of Madness. But at the last minute, it fell through, so it didn't happen. But that's just a rumor. But Baldur is a really great character, and I hope that at some point he comes into the Marvel Universe. But you know, it was clear that as he starts to stare at that, you know, he's made all of this progress, Loki has, in terms of self-growth and self-actualization and becoming more true to himself and becoming more heroic. But he starts to unravel right there in front of that when he sees that, like, Baldur's, you know, why isn't it him? Why isn't it Thor and Loki, the actual brother and the father? And he's like, you know, he's getting pissed off about it, and he's unraveling, and he's jealous. And I just love that Mobius just steps in and, like a good friend, reassures him and is like, you know, dude, you're one of these guys. You're God. That just blows my mind. It always blows my mind. And he just does it casually, walks away. And I think you can just see it all kind of drain out of Loki, that he doesn't have to compete with them. He doesn't have to get jealous about that anymore, you know? And
I read it differently. Alex, did you read it any differently?
No, how'd you read it?
I read that Mobius was kind of being a dick, and that he was like, I forget you're a god. You're as good as Baldur. And he's like, of course I'm as good as Baldur. I'm better than Baldur. I'm a prince of Asgard. This is fucked up that I'm not up there on one of these carvings. I think it was more of Mobius kind of demeaning him a little bit. And I think that Loki's still kind of frustrated and disappointed and embarrassed. And then his face changes to say, I miss them. You know, I miss them. And then he's like, Thor's not that tall. So he kind of then goes right back to being
But what I was going to say was, you know, I hope that Thor gets to meet Loki again. And I know they probably will, but I'm just saying, this new Loki, and how is that going to be received? Because he's a different person. Right. I don't think he's going to be, he'll still be the god of mischief, but I don't think he's going to be the same Loki that's a pain in the ass as much as he is. Maybe he will, I don't know.
He's not going to be able to appreciate this new Loki, and he's not smart enough to appreciate this new Loki.
Well, he never could appreciate Loki. Nobody can, you know, because he's always been on that higher level. But yeah, I just thought that was really interesting that he's getting snubbed. It just goes to show you, your reputation carries you. You know, his reputation has always been bad. Just because he does a couple of good things doesn't mean that things get changed either. So, but like you said, it was funny as hell. I was like, oh, geez. But,
I thought it was great. I thought it was a great scene.
So right then, a cart goes by. I have to bring it up because I love the callback that we get later. A cart goes by that says prize-winning Alpine Hogs. And then they turn around and see the sandwich board that shows that Victor Timely is going to be doing an astounding temporal Marvel. So we get the word Marvel again. And then they figure that that's probably where they're going to find Renslayer. And then they go in there.
Yeah, there were a bunch of Easter eggs, too, I thought, through that sequence when they're out walking around and then after his event. The Chinese theater that they come out, it looks just like the one in Iron Man 3. Then he passes the Egyptian exhibit. Also, in his apartment, there's a number of Egyptian relic-y looking things. which again, just a little bit of a tip of the hat to the Rama Tut personification of Kang. Huh. And then there were also, he had a, in his lab, he had a bunch of, he had signs with Asian symbols on them. And there's a lot of Asian symbols, which again, I think is an Easter egg to Shang-Chi and his rings of power that look and act very similar to the ones in his probability drive. There's lots of theories that the rings from Shang-Chi are in fact somehow tied to Kang.
Wow.
You know, because if you look at the, especially that city in Quantumania and his device when he's, you know, powering up and the chair or whatever and all the rings move over and each other like that. It's it's very similar to what was done in the Shang-Chi movie. So just some Easter eggs.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. So what?
Go ahead.
What did I miss?
No, you didn't miss anything. It's just like
you just dismissed him like Morpheus just dismissed Loki.
Yeah,
I did.
Yeah. Okay, moving on.
Yeah,
it's okay. You're a god too, Kirk. You're a god too.
and Alex, you're clearly a friend, and I appreciate that.
I didn't mean to.
I wish I had my good Owen Wilson imitation, but I don't.
He's hard. He's hard to imitate.
Man.
Yeah, that's bad.
Actually. That was
dude, you're a god too.
So where are we going? Where are we going next?
I think we need to do Victor Timely's presentation. You want to set it up?
Okay. Right, that's fine. So we see the Marvel and everybody's like, you suck. And then he plugs it in and boom. And they don't know what the hell happened. And they don't know what the hell it is, but they think it's really cool.
So how did you guys, okay. Like I watched that scene for like 45 minutes where he was explaining his device. And at the end, it was like complete bullshit. It wasn't creating energy. It wasn't doing time. I was trying to figure out what it meant. I was like, this is how the TVA works. This is the original piece of equipment. And it was nothing like that at all.
Right.
Just bullshit. I thought there was a lot of cool callbacks. Like the camera pans and we see some guy sitting at the bar drinking a beer. And it turns out later that he is in cahoots with Victor Timely. Mm-hmm. I like that Victor Timely was absolutely taking advantage of all of those like white sweaty racists in there who called him boy and were trying to steal his invention. And then when they realized they couldn't steal it, they were essentially stealing it for the bids that they were putting forth. I mean, they believed it was going to power the world.
No, then, I thought it was a good, I mean, Marvel tends to shy away from being political or being controversial. Or maybe it's not Marvel. Maybe it's Disney that shies away from that. Because Marvel Comics has never.
Marvel's always been,
Marvel's always been go right after it. Drug addiction, racism. I mean, they got the character, the Hate Monger, is basically a Ku Klux Klan dude. But so it's probably Disney. But I was pleased to see that they insinuated that, they showed that, they gave it a subtle call out. And another disheartening thing is, of course, when Timely has to respond to one of the guy's statement, I don't remember exactly he starts responding like, well, you know, you would say that or something, and then pauses because of the way he speaks. And then the second half of it was more like a general, he was speaking more generally as opposed to that. So it was being very, like, he wanted to be confrontational with that guy, but he was choosing to word himself differently because it was just life-threateningly dangerous in that time to be more directly controversial or more directly confrontational.
All four of those dudes essentially surrounded him like a lynch mob, you know, when they were like, give me the patent and things like that. It did reek of absolute danger.
I loved how, you know, going back to what you were saying, Kirk, about the Ferris wheel and how he locked him in the Ferris wheel, that kind of gives it a different perspective.
Yeah.
As though he's locking him in a branch.
Yeah.
And then he's going to, you know, when you look at it that way.
The branch goes around on the timeline.
Yeah, exactly. I just love that when they're in his office that they have to leave, and the way he like explains it, oh, this is just my workspace. I have my other one in like Wisconsin or something.
That was weird. Didn't you guys think that was kind of strange?
No, not at all. That's a con man. You don't live where you steal. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's fair.
So he was doing business in Chicago, but he was, you know, creating stuff over in Illinois or Wisconsin.
Wisconsin. The Caribbean of the Midwest.
Yeah. Yes, because when you think of Wisconsin, you think of the Caribbean.
Right.
I know we'll get all those letters from the Wisconsin Tourist Bureau now.
Yeah, another crit that caused me to not give it a perfect 5 of 5. I just felt that the fight scene between the two Lokis on the Ferris wheel, it just felt like a little bit of a do-over from the finale and season one, and I didn't like that. I thought they could be more creative or more imaginative on that.
Okay,
she seems really one-note now.
Well, I was gonna bring something up about her.
Yeah,
what's her fucking deal?
Like, yeah, she's right. Yeah, we've heard it enough. I get her motivation. It makes sense in the real world, but we as viewers have seen enough episodes in a row where she says the same four lines and then
Well,
gets
no, the thing
mad.
Is she still your girl, Sydney?
She is, but this whole episode, she said the same four lines that she said last episode. I need a little more.
And will she understand that as much as she wants to take down the TVA, I mean, I don't know how many times Loki has to say it, we need this guy to save everything so that we don't die.
Yeah.
Like, I think she wants to die.
And everyone else.
I don't understand. I don't understand her motivation. Or am I missing something?
She's not getting it.
Well, I think they're not spending as much time with her as they did season one. Season one, it was really about the introduction of that character and getting to see her and have her. She was kind of the focal point of the whole story for the season, and I don't think that's the case this season. I think we expected it to continue, but mm-hmm. I think they're going in a little bit, you know, they want to develop more the birth and origin of Kang. The Miss Minutes, I think, is ultimately probably going to be the big bad.
Don't you think they could have changed it so that she's on board a little bit?
I think that they're trying to develop that so that in the climax she teams up and becomes part of, you know, part
maybe
of the good guys team. You know what I mean?
At this point, I would be surprised. She just is always like machete forward, like her green machete, which I don't like. It seems kind of Ninja Turtles, and that's all she is. She just shows up places with her machete.
Well, okay. Since you guys are bashing her, I'm going to go fight for her. That sequence I didn't care for, but that sequence has that fight scene on the Ferris wheel. It does have my favorite line from the episode. And when she's in the middle of the fight, she says, "Renslayer sent him on a path he wasn't meant for." And to me, that's just like her. And I think that was a key line, because later when she can kill him and she doesn't, it's because he pleads to her and basically presents to her the fact that he's a variant who's being persecuted for crimes he has not yet committed, which is what exactly happened to her. And all of a sudden she found a connection with him and a similarity with him, and she understood him differently than she had, and therefore had mercy for him. And in turns and presents her anger at who she really should be angry at, which is, you know, Renslayer, who's trying to, perpetuate the situation that was before. So, and the TVA, this guy hasn't even been to the TVA yet. And I just thought that was a great line that then came back to us in that next scene where in his lab. It was just great writing. And then also it gave us some depth to her. And I think that's what they're trying to do. She's grappling with this. You know, she doesn't, she wants there to be no TVA, but at the same time, she sees the importance of what they're doing too. And she's just starting to kind of come around to it, I think.
That's good. I didn't realize she had started to come around to it. And I feel like that's way more compliments to Victor Timely for being a super good manipulator, because he was like, I can make my own choices. I don't even know that guy. I mean, all of that's true. And I thought it was heartwarming the way he was saying it, but part of me didn't trust him either, that he just knew how to manipulate this particular person. And I think I was just tired of people showing up in that workshop without having been invited. It was just like one after another. I mean, I know we're not there yet, but like my major gripe is that Ravonna was kind of hiding in the shadows for a while. I have a lot of gripes about Ravona's path to that workshop. So I guess I'll use that as like a segue to back up. But okay, so there is a chase. There is the fight, and then Miss Minutes and Ravona and Victor end up in his pied-a-terre. And he's told quite a bit from the two of them, and you kind of start to pick up on some Miss Minutes like disgust when they're looking at their refrigerator chair. And Miss Minutes is like, "Do you like my performance?" So he wants to know what happened. And Renslayer says that at a different time, a version of you created the TVA, but two variants of the same Norse god murdered him, which results in countless different versions of you. So I do, again, I think I wrote down these points because like I think that he's a different human altogether than who created the actual TVA. Well, I should say who became he who remains. And then they end up going on a boat, which I thought was so strange. And I loved this episode. I just didn't think that made any sense. But they get the usual accommodations. What is that, like a lifeboat that they're kind of hanging out in off the side?
Yeah, they're sitting in it on the ferry.
Right. And then Ravona falls asleep and they push her out to sea. Why would she asleep?
It was a little bit more complicated than that. It's as a result of her clarifying to him that she's looking for a partnership with him.
Right.
The minute she said that, it was clear that that was an off button for him. And then the next scene is he's dropping her off the side. And he's
so
like,
He had said earlier
in the scene where he has the presentation to the guy trying to, you know, he said, "Oh, I don't want to buy
his
from
thing.
You. Steal his thing. I want to be your partner." And he's like, "I don't do partners. I don't take partners." And
so then, he just hates the word because a bunch of people have tried to steal from him.
I don't know if he hates the word, but I think he's just, he doesn't want.
He's already processed this entire concept to where if he has her as a partner, he can't rule the TVA and time alone.
I'm taking it differently. Okay. I'm thinking that you've got jealous lover AI, Miss Minutes, who is just feeding him what he wants to hear. She's been manipulating this whole thing.
I don't agree, because the minute she implies that she wants to be with him.
Ravona does say that part's definitely true.
But so does Miss Minutes. She said, right, "Together we're going to do this." And then he goes boop into the machine. He doesn't want a partner. You know what I mean? And all three people that present him with partnerships get knocked off the board.
Oh, so you're saying when Miss Minutes gets erased kind of by him or turned off by him when she's she had also suggested a partnership.
Yeah.
I think she definitely knew that that was a turn off for him, because when Ravona said it, she was like, "Oh, you just screwed up and now he gets to be mine." And then Ravona falls asleep, which I cannot stress enough that I think that's so dumb. And then Miss Minutes, I think, is probably saying to him, you know, she wants to be your partner. You don't want that, do you? Let's push her out to sea. And so they do.
Right. But that's because Miss Minutes is under the impression that she should be his partner. She wants to be his partner. She thinks that's what he wants ultimately, and that that's what's going to be best. But that's
I think that she
wants.
Does want that. But her motivations in this moment were love for him. She wanted his attention. She did not want one more time to see one more variant of Kang falling in love with one more. Well, it's always, I think, the same Ravona. By the way, did I say this earlier that I think that if He Who Remain did set this up and identify this variant and then tell Miss Minutes, take Ravona, tell Ravona to give this book to him, make sure Ravona's there when he gives his presentation. It's because every time a He Who Remain dies and they have to identify another one, you better take Ravona with you, because that variant is going to fall in love with her. And it's the only way you're going to be able to kind of manipulate him through a bunch of things. I think Miss Minutes, obviously, because she's nuts. She gets tired of that. But I mean, I think she would be willing for both of them to be partners. Maybe I shouldn't use that word. I'm going to get put in a lifeboat, but with him. I just think she wants him romantically.
Yeah, though clearly she's got a weird fascination and romantic attachment to him. That becomes clear when she wants the body and she's begging him to do a make a body for him, and then she puts her face on the mannequin. I mean, it was
so gross.
It was creepy.
Yeah, it was.
Which stood out to me is when he said back in season one, the final episode, and he says, "Oh, is she still calling me that?" He remains. I think it's kind of creepy, but I like it. And good. I thought that was kind of weird, you know what I mean? Because she was being super creepy.
Yeah, she's like, you wrote this AI to play chess with, but you gave me the ability to like write my own programming and to right. follow whims. But I was denied one whim. And I'm like, that's sex, right?
Ms. All Minister I know whim. Is that sounded like single white female.
Yeah.
Or the just Sharon Stone movie. What's that movie?
Fatal Attraction?
Fatal Attraction. Yeah, it sounded a little... Fatal Attraction or, you know, single white female.
I thought it was really terribly placed. Obviously, she's been feeling like this, neglected by variants of Kang for eons, and none of them are falling in love with her because she's a fucking clock. And yet she brings it up to this guy who's known
her
for...
she's a sexy clock.
She's so hot. Do you like her better in black and white or orange?
I gotta go orange. Gotta go orange.
You had that answer locked and loaded. That's right. I just don't know why she like decides.
I haven't
to
thought
approach.
About it. I assure you.
She just could have talked to He Who Remains about this like 6 months ago. You know, she didn't have to bring it on this brand new guy who's never heard of her before and doesn't experience this. And then all of a sudden, Ravona Renslayer like steps out from the eaves holding a time stick. And I'm like, how'd you even get in here? I don't know if this bothered you guys as much as it did me, but like she approaches from not the side of the room that the door is on. So when did she get in there? Because last I saw her, she was rowing a boat and would have needed to enter that space like after them.
Okay. Yeah, I think
how bothered by this are you guys?
Oh, I think she was just hiding out. She wanted to hear what Miss Minutes had to say. She wanted to know. She wanted to listen before she presented herself. You know, she wanted to see how this was going to unfold between the two of them. You know,
how did she get in there?
She broke in. She broke in before... Before they got there. Yeah, that's all.
It's Marvel magic.
Yeah, I think, you know, Miss Minutes is clearly, as we said at the top, is becoming kind of the main bad of the show. She may even expand further because I thought it was interesting the whole thing about getting a body and then putting her face on the mannequin and everything else. That reminded me greatly of Ultron.
Yeah.
And you know, Ultron comes back a lot in the comics, and I could see her, you know, getting a hold of some body, maybe mm-hmm. the Ultron body, and becoming a female Ultron
who I think she's going to get a hold of Renslayer's body.
Which, you know, as I'm just talking about, Renslayer's body would be pretty wild, too. As I'm sitting here talking about it, the big bad... Not the big bad, but the main villain of Secret Wars in the comics is Dr. Doom, who's all in metal, right? And they're not probably going to do that because you'd have to introduce Dr. Doom before that. And Dr. Doom is not going to be, I don't think, is going to be introduced before the Fantastic Four arrive. And the Fantastic Four aren't going to arrive until, I believe, just before Secret Wars. So... I think someone else is going to play the role that Dr. Doom plays in that comic book mm-hmm. storyline. Maybe it's a full-bodied, metal, using Ultron's body version of Miss Minutes, who ends up saving everything from the multiversal war down to one battle planet where there's remnants of different, you know, characters from different universes.
It's which is almost horrific, though. I mean, it's terrifying to live on the only planet left, and it's run by some metal-bodied Miss Minutes.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, that's pretty spooky. What do you think of the mannequins?
Why were there so many?
Yeah.
Is he sewing?
I don't know.
He's got a mannequin fetish.
But
it's a nice space.
There's a whole robotics theme, too, that's been since season one, where, you know, they're checking for robots with the machine that checks whether you're a robot or not. Then it turns out that the timekeepers are robots. So there's that whole thing. And then in Quantumania, all his army and his soldiers and the entities that are working for him or whatever, you never see a face. They have these white circular egg-shaped heads that look very much like those mannequins. So I think he's starting this, you know, at this point to start to develop this idea of developing robotics.
Okay, so this Victor Timely, you think, is going to become Kang Prime? Have you said that and I just didn't follow that?
I don't know. I said it's a theory that's out there. I vacillate. I don't know. You know, I think Kang could be separate, that he who remains is this Khan guy Timely, who's figured out a way to, he is a variant of Kang, so he has, you know, a natural ability to kind of fall into this role, but that I don't know. I know a lot of people think that Timely will become Kang, and then Kang ultimately becomes He Who Remains. But I don't know.
There was a moment that I was seeing Kang from Quantumania on his face. So he was crying when Sylvie was going to stab him in the face, and he's begging for his life and saying that he can make his own decisions. And those tears running down his cheeks, and I think the cameraman and director wanted us to see it. They looked like those scars that Kang Prime had.
Yeah. I don't think we've heard why or how he got those.
No.
Right? Not yet. Yeah. Very interesting. No, that's a great catch. I didn't catch that.
What Kirk and I are talking about, I don't think we've ever brought it up, is that we debated once upon a time whether or not He Who Remains, like before the season started, He Who Remains was Kang from Ant-Man, but Kang from Ant-Man has like these scars that go from above his eyebrows, like vertically down to his kind of his cheekbone across both eyes. And we have never seen that on He Who Remains. So I guess they're not the same person. Not sure.
Or they're the same person at different points in time. Sure,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I maintain that I think that once He Who Remained died, all of the Kangs appeared, including Kang Prime, Kang the Conqueror, and that's why we saw him subsequently he's in Quantumania. But then again, he was alive that entire time in Quantumania, which suggests that TVA is not pruning timelines or people in the quantum realm. So they existed at the exact same time, even though He Who Remains is supposed to be singular. Right. I don't know. It's super complicated. All right.
I have a crazy theory. If you want to hear crazy theory,
here we go.
Let's go. Let's get crazy. Okay, we're gonna get totally crazy in the house. All right. Renslayer. In the comics, Renslayer is a princess from the far future who Kang falls in love with, and then they can never be together. And she has to die. She dies, and then he has to travel through time to try and set it up so that they will come together, but they never are ever able to consummate. So everybody's thinking that's, you know, what's happening here with Renslayer, right? And they get their romance in this. What if Renslayer is in fact a female variant of He Who Remains? Or Kang.
Oh, kind of like a Loki, Sylvie.
Exactly. The same way Sylvie is a female variant of Loki. They're both seeking free will, although Renslayer's through being the one person that, you know, like she said in season one, the one person that has free will is the person who put together the TVA. So she's going to find them. So she sees her free will as being the person in power, being in control, or being the right-hand person of that person in charge or being, whereas Sylvie's wants free will by getting rid of the TVA and its time management. So they kind of are both searching for the same thing, but with a different look on the world and way to get it. So I just think that's something we should think about, because the struggle of two women, we talked last, I think it was last week, we were talking about the whole patriarch and the storyline. And maybe it was when we were going over the first season, actually, and female empowerment and dealing with the structural patriarch and the authoritarian kind of autocratic system. And then I was like, well, it's really the story of Loki, though. So why would it be about women? But it's not just about the two women who are variants. It's also the two men. And that in an autocratic patriarchy that has written everybody into roles, it's unhealthy for both men and women. And that's maybe the message of the show. You know, for Renslayer, she has to be second fiddle. for Sylvie, you know, it's no actual life. You know, she has to have this childhood trauma and doesn't get a chance to actually experience life. For Loki, it's always he has to be the bad guy. He always has to lose if he sticks with this current autocratic system, patriarchal system. And Mobius, it's his inability to be a free spirit. He has to be a cog in a wheel. Mm-hmm. And so they all have not necessarily trauma, but, you know, limitations on what they can do with their lives because of the sacred timeline structure. And so all four of them are actually, you know, fighting against that in their own ways.
I love that. I think that was a really good description of the limitations that like a patriarchy puts on people, like you said, both men and women, because of these predefined roles. I mean, I kind of thought that maybe you were going to mention that maybe the secret that Miss Minutes has and is going to tell Ravonna, and Ravonna is going to be really mad about it, would maybe be that she is a Kang variant and that she has been being kept down, because even though he might know she's his variant, he's like chosen to oppress her because she's a female form of him.
I love it.
Because I don't know what
you took the crazy theory and one-upped it. I love it.
Yay.
You ratcheted it up. I love it.
Yes.
Yes, okay, I agree. What do you think, Alex? You think that's a crazy theory, or you think it's a
I think it's batshit crazy.
You think
and
reaching?
I think it's awesome. But I think Renslayer as Kang's variant would be kind of neat, because you've already laid the groundwork with Sylvie.
Right.
So I'm up for anything. I hope that's not the case. I hope it's really a love story.
Right.
Because then you've got Miss Minutes.
Yeah, but we've got a love story.
You can love yourself.
Yeah, we've got a love. Yeah, exactly.
That's a different podcast, Sydney.
Well, Loki's been doing it.
Yeah, Loki and Sylvie love each other.
No, I understand that. But I think that I like that triangle of the three of them and how Miss Minutes is going to deal with that. I mean, she just threw her off a boat. So, I mean, you know,
terrifying.
I just want to know when Obi, and I know I'm going on a different tangent, when Obi meets Miss Minutes again, what's that going to be like? Because I think that's going to be an
important gonna lock her in a box, and he's going to stab her through the heart, and he's going to be like, I'm in charge, you can't be like this. Is when we find out that he's not some sweet
he's
little
Kang.
Pushover.
He's the variant. He's the
he's the man behind the curtain. He's the man behind the man behind the curtain. Right. Okay, so we were saying that there's a secret that Miss Minutes has, and I like this one, the variant one, but I think that very likely the secret is one that we kind of have already sussed out, which is that this is a repeating process, that every single time he who remains dies over eons, it gets replaced with another he who remains, and that he falls in love with her and she falls in love with him over and over and over and over again, but she gets her mind wiped after each and every incarnation of them. I think that's how many times the TVA has had their mind wipes, is every single time we get a new Kang variant at the head of the table.
That makes sense.
But I don't know. And I already told you guys that I think that Miss Minutes is going to take over Ravonna's body so she can bang a Kang. Oh, what? That rhymes.
Wait, we want to get hashtag bang a Kang.
No. We need to change the name of this podcast. That's it. We're it's no longer the Lokiverse. It's bang a Kang.
Bang a Kang.
Let's go. Change it. Tell
I'm
Jason. Jason, we're done with this.
Jason.
We're
going to have a new logo,
Jason,
and everything.
That's right. New logo. New that's right. Oh,
I've already
God.
Made six t-shirts.
I don't want to do the art to that one. I will take a t-shirt, though.
I really want to see the art.
Bang a Kang. Bang a Kang. Oh, my
Imagine
God.
Imagine if we had those at Comic-Con. You'd
that
sell
been
out.
Awesome. Dude.
Bang
a
Kang.
Kang. Oh, I love it. I love it.
Oh, my gosh. What was the thing that you said last week?
Douche canoe.
You're going to bang a Kang in a douche
bang
canoe.
A All right, so my standout performance in this episode was Jonathan Majors' portrayal of Victor Timely. You know, he has created, through his amazing acting, completely different characters each time that stand alone and don't feel like the same actor at all. I mean, when we watch He Who Remains, you know, when we watched Kang in Quantumania and now Timely, they stand out to me as three completely different characters. I don't see Jonathan Majors. You know what I mean? Yeah. I saw Kang Prime in Quantumania. A lot of it is, and most of it, it's his acting and his speech, his ability to transform that particular character's cadence and timing, and I guess cadence and timing is the same thing, their speech pattern. And Victor Timely, again, with the stutter and the way he stops himself and pauses so that he doesn't stutter, I think.
There's a physicality. I see your point, why he was, why he would stop himself to prevent more stuttering. But yeah, he also, and He Who Remains had so much physicality. He would jump up on the desk. I think he was standing on the bench. He had the prop of the apple. I hope I'm not stepping on your point, but I agree.
No, go for it.
Brilliant. I think that there's a varying level of empathy that you give to these three characters, and I'm going to put them in order. He Who Remains, I think, is just trustworthy. And then Victor Timely, I didn't like all of the stuttering, and I hate to say that. I don't mean that against anyone who stutters, but then when I realized that he was doing it because he was a con man and he was kind of trying to gain this like innocent look for his crowd, I thought that was great. I was more of a hero. And then there's Kang the Conqueror from Quantumania that I didn't really have any empathy for whatsoever. So yeah, this is all the same actor, all playing the same guy.
They also all, to me, in some more than subtly than others, come across as a villain. He's mm-hmm. very much, Timely is probably the least, but at the same time, the dropping Renslayer off the side and some of the things he says so that he can buy himself some time. And, you know, when he's talking with Miss Minutes, he can tell he's trying to control exactly what he says. And I don't know.
I'm surprised you put him as less villainous than He Who Remains. What do you think is villainous about him?
He's completely written the script, mm-hmm. knows how things are going, and he's trying to manipulate these two characters who have finally found themselves and feel connection for each other against each, try to pit them against each other to get what he wants, which is for her to kill him. And, you know, he's just as manipulative and evil in my mind as some ways more so than Timely. Timely's trying to make a buck, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And then, of course, Kang Prime was dark as hell.
Oh, yeah. Totally is. I still really feel that all of those actions that He Who Remain took were for altruistic reasons. I think he does want to protect time and space and everything. And I think that it wasn't so much as pinning them up against each other, an ultimate test to see if they could take it. Did you see his body in the Citadel? It's pretty decayed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, it's been, you know, it's been some time.
I thought time didn't pass there.
Well, it passes differently.
Yeah. Body's still rot. That's what we learned.
Body's still rot. That's right. Well, they are organic material. I think the reality is going to turn out to be that none of this has to happen because there doesn't have to be Kangs. And if they had not just done what they were doing with the branch timeline, with giving the manual to the kid and everything else, then this next new Kang would never have happened. I think that the issue is that if they can find a way to get rid of all the Kangs, then Kang doesn't necessarily evolve. He doesn't actually always have to happen. I think that's part of his story to help perpetuate his own existence.
Okay, I love that because I figured the way for, you know, once OB makes it so that we can have almost infinite timelines and they're not going to cause a problem, that the second step would be to remove all Kangs from existence across the multiverses. But I think you're right that this episode posited that had he not been influenced, he would have just been a normal guy named Victor. You don't have to develop into some conqueror or whatever. I agree with you. So yeah, they can kind of allow them to grow unchecked.
Right. I think we're also going to find out, because we've been told two different things about the multiverse. We've been told in the Lokiverse and in Quantumania that if there's a multiverse, then there will be multiple Kangs and there will be a great multiversal war with the Kangs all fighting each other. And that will be the end of everything. But we've also been told in Multiverse of Madness that there's this thing called incursions, which are universes colliding, and that one or both get destroyed. And if that starts to happen on a larger scale, it can be the end of everything. So those are actually two different
things completely.
Things about that can destroy the multiverse and destroy everything.
The incursions are prevented by them laying the timeline flat in the loom so that they're not literally physically crossing paths. And those intersections are where, like in Doctor Strange, when the buildings start to like collapse in on each other and things like that, those are universes getting too close. But I think they can run alongside parallel. They just can't intersect.
Well, I don't know if that science is those rules have been completely delineated.
They show it every time they show any drawings of the sacred timeline. There's always a static point, like little teeny lightnings, where anytime one of these two branches cross each other, I think they've set that forward.
Well, one thing's for sure, that as all of these timelines are trying to get into the loom and can't fit, that they're colliding. So that's definitely one possible way that they could be increasing incursions. Because I think in the comic books, then again, not that they're the end all be all, obviously MCU changes it dramatically. But in Secret Wars, it's not the Kangs that cause the end of everything. It's the incursions. And it's the traveling between universes that causes more and more incursions, and they get out of control and they end up, you know, feeding on each other. So, you know, I think that may be why we're getting the Avengers Kang Dynasty first, which will resolve all of this Kang stuff. And then we're going to get Secret Wars, because it's going to be kind of like Infinity War and Endgame. You know, Infinity War, all the heroes come together and they win, but then at the end they lose. And I think they're going to beat Kang, but then you're going to have all these incursions and the end result is going to be the same. All the universes are going to die and everything is going to go. That's what's going to have. They're going to end up with the battle world in Secret Wars, having saved just portions of different universes and put them all on one planet. So
how did I never figure? I just feel like I thought Obi was going to just be a huge success, but you're right. We have evidence that there's going to have to be elimination of these universes to get to only one. That is way darker now that everything's gone except for that planet.
Hey, Kirk, thanks for bringing this whole thing down.
Yeah, I'm secretly a very dark guy. maybe not so secretly anymore.
he's gonna make a comic book cover. It's just gonna be very dark.
Very dark is a good title for a comic. That's Alex, do you have any favorite performances of the week?
I do, as a matter of fact. Victor Timely, it was great to see him finally. And as much as I hate Miss Minutes, that was awesome.
Yeah. She was going to be mine. So absolutely. Miss Minutes kills it. Tara Strong kills it with all the voice acting. I mean, you know, you hear her scoff at the interactions between Victor and Ramona a couple of times and you're like, what is that about? What is she so annoyed about? And then, I mean, it's jealousy. And then it's like violent jealousy. And then at the end, you know, when she's talking to Ravona and she says, I've got a secret, but it's going to make you really angry. She was conspiratorial a little bit, but also,
evil. Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, that would be my second standout as well. Okay.
So why don't we go into the news section? And I know, Kirk, you have some interesting news off the wire.
Well, it's kind of sad news off the wire from yesterday's Deadline article. It's Deadpool 3, Merc with a Mouth, moving off May release date as the actor strike shakes up 2024 theatrical schedule. And that's the lead line. This is, again, Deadline from yesterday, October 19th. It says, in one of the first major blows to the 2024 theatrical release schedule, due to the ongoing actor strike, sources tell us that Marvel Studios' Deadpool 3 won't be making its May 3rd start of the summer theatrical release date, even if the strike ends in the next few weeks. A 2024 restart on the half-finished Deadpool 3 would not get the Ryan Reynolds, Hugh Jackman threequel to a May opening date. So there's still going to be a lot of other shuffling, I think, going on. Obviously, if that moves to May, then other things that were to follow it, like I believe Blade, Captain America 4. I think I did hear once where they were going to switch that Captain America 4 would move up to where Deadpool was, but I don't think that's going to happen either.
Do we know what Brave New World is going to be? Is that part of an old comic, or?
I'm not sure which comic line, what comics it's going to be based on, but I know, I have heard that there's a, what's it called? The Secret Serpent Society, or so the Serpent Society, which is a Captain America bad guy group. And Sam Wilson as Cap fights them in a whole series of comics as well. So they might be doing some of that. Also with the actor that's playing the new General Ross.
I know you're talking. Come on,
help me out here. my age is showing. But anyway, plays Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Right, I know you're talking about.
Okay, anyway, he's embarrassed. I'm embarrassed. He's playing a character that becomes the Red Hulk, and supposedly that's, and also the leader, I believe, is in that, which is a Hulk villain and is the one responsible for turning Ross into the Red Hulk. So there's a lot of speculation that that's going to be a big part of the storyline, which will then lead into the other Thunderbolts film, which is going to be kind of like a Dark Avengers, which was a line of comics where bad guys basically become the Avengers, and they're led by, in this case, it'll be Ross. It was a different character, in the comics. But so that's all I know about Captain America from this point.
I know you had mentioned something before the podcast about Spider-Man, the new video game.
Oh, yeah. That was some news, too. The new Spider-Man 2 on PS5 is available as of today, 10/20. It looks absolutely amazing. As I mentioned to you guys when we were talking, I don't have a PS5, so I'm an Xbox guy. But man, I wish I could play that game. It looks so, so cool. I mean, it's huge, open environment. You can just go anywhere and do anything in, you know, all of Manhattan. And you can play as Miles. You can play as Peter. You can play as Venom. Cool. Just, yeah, looks really, and that's the animation cool. Just looks fantastic. So
the first one was really good too.
Yeah. Sydney, didn't we have another piece of news?
Yeah, it's small. Just a reminder that the Marvels is coming out on November 10th, and then other places I saw it was November 9th. So I think it's just kind of one of those things where some markets it might come out on Thursday night, and some places it might not come out until Friday. Yeah, that'll be fun.
That looks like it's going to be good.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting. From a marketing point of view, they've done something a little different. And it makes me worried that they're worried about whether or not the turnout's going to be good for that movie. But there's they are hinting at additional, you know, like a guest appearance in the most recent trailers. She says the Ms. Marvel, not Captain Marvel, but Ms. Marvel says, I've invited a friend. And they cut to us and you see the Bifrost going for a second. So it could be Thor. Who knows? Maybe it's Loki. Could be Baldur. We're going to finally get that. Could be nobody Asgardian. Could be something totally different. I don't know. Silver Surfer. But yeah, Silver Surfer. So
it
seems like they're going to try and bring someone else in. But they don't usually ever let that kind of out. You know what I mean? It's a little different.
There's nothing but kind of bad press about Brie Larson. So maybe they're just trying to counteract that a little bit. I think her
movie was fantastic. I thought Captain Marvel, the original, was a great film. Not you know, not one of my top five, but definitely
Its nostalgia. I liked her.
Yeah, I liked her too. I thought she played a great, I mean, that was a tough role because you're playing a human that now thinks they're an alien who has these flashes of their past, and you're trying to get straight on that, and you're a soldier for these other aliens. Then you find out that you're actually a human that was kidnapped and brainwashed. And you know, how do you come to terms with that? You can't just step right back into being who you were when you were kidnapped. So I that was a challenging role. I thought she did a great job, and the chemistry with her and Sam Jackson was fantastic.
That was a really good recap. Like, I feel like everybody has what they need to know now. Remember what her entire origin is. Thank you.
Yeah. No problem.
Well, I think that's all the news that's fit to print. Why don't we go into some listener feedback, Sydney? Why don't you take the first one?
Okay. So Kathy on Facebook was suggesting that we talk about something that happened last episode, which was Doc's pruning those like millions, we'll call it millions of timelines. And about 95% of those timelines had advanced past Red Line. And so she points us to the beginning of season one, episode two. So in that, right after the opening credits, Loki is reading the Jet Ski magazine and Miss Minutes is doing like his onboard training. It's she's asking him questions. It's right before she calls him a jerk. And then she like jumps back into the computer. And right. during that conversation, she asks him what happens when a Nexus event branches past Red Line. And he answers, it is when the TVA can no longer reset a Nexus event. And she said, and that would result in the destruction of the timeline and collapse of reality as we know it. Okay. So Kathy was saying that if this episode two set up that you cannot reset the timelines, then how did, if they passed Red Line, then how was Docs doing that with like a million timelines that had approached Red Line? Well, I'm going to attempt to answer this. And I think it kind of supports something that I've said to you guys a couple of times. And that is that there's a difference between pruning an entire timeline and resetting part of it. Not every single time you go in to mess with a timeline, when they like went to the Renaissance Fair, for example, do you prune everything that happened in that universe? For instance, when, because there's a difference between resetting and pruning, because a few minutes later after that, at the Renaissance Fair, they're kind of quizzing him on what he's learned in his trainings. And he's asked, and what do these do? And he's shown reset charges, like right before they walk into the tent. And he, Loki, answers, reset charges prune the affected radius of a branch timeline, allowing time to heal all its wounds. Which, by the way, sounds like a nice way to say disintegrate everything in its vicinity. And then Mobius sounds impressed and he says, he's on it. So there's a difference between pruning the entirety of a universe and just putting reset charges in a time and space and erasing that moment and the vicinity. So I think they erased like some of that stuff that happened in the tent there at the Renaissance Fair. I think they erased some stuff that happened in that church in medieval France in season one. And I think that they erased some stuff right around, and I don't know how they did this, Loki grabbing the Tesseract in his timeline. But if a timeline gets to Red Line, you have to take out that whole entire universe. And if you don't and leave it alone, then that kind of supports my other theory that it can cross paths with another timeline and that causes an incursion and then the destruction of reality. What do you guys think?
A couple things. One is, I think, I don't know about the only pruning off a little portion of it, because if you were to take out those people that have been in, are in just that little section, then you're changing that timeline significantly
so much
that would cause other branches.
Most giant hole in this, but it's so much nicer to think of the TVA as not taking out a trillion people every time somebody fucks up, right. And instead just like whatever happens in the tent stays inside the tent, because it says and time will heal itself. So I hope that's true.
Right. I also think that we get lied to all the time by He Who Remains, Kang, Victor Timely, Miss Minutes. And I would not be surprised if, you see, because Kang's goal with this whole thing, or He Who Remains' goal with the sacred timeline and all of that and the controlling of the branching timelines, is to prevent any other Kangs. So he doesn't have any competition, so that there doesn't become a universal Kang war, supposedly. So, you know, I think that it works to his advantage then to have everybody believe that if they don't prune these things quickly, that it will be the end of the universe. I don't know if that's true or not. And I think that's one of the big questions, you know, because basically Sylvie's saying no. You know what I mean? If you just got to let life, you know, move, you got to let time go. And
she seems really uninformed when she's making these opinions, though.
Well, I don't know, but somebody's going to be right about that, you know. And again, I was saying earlier that I think Kang is the problem, you know what I mean? And they've got to eliminate Kang from the equation because he creates all of these problems by traveling through time, and that causes incursions and fighting with himself for control with all his other variants. That he's the problem. If you can eliminate him, I don't know if branching timelines would necessarily be a huge problem. But I don't know, because again, the ancient one said, if you mess with time, it does, that will be the end of everything. You know what I mean? Because if it doesn't, all the incursions will happen and everything else. So Janet says, I did not like episode 3. A confusing mishmash and not enough Loki. Well, I will agree with it. That wasn't enough Loki, but I understand the reason. you had a lot to cover, with Timely and Kang's and Ravonna and Mrs. Minutes. And so, but
I was surprised at how much negative feedback this thing had. You know, I went online last night and was reading comments, and I mean, I would say more people than not didn't like it, but that kind of brings us to our third piece of feedback from Samantha. And she says, I've never seen an IMDb rating over a 9, not for a movie, a TV show, or an episode of a TV show. Season 1, episode 4 was a 9.0, but tonight's episode was a 9.5. The cast and crew must be thrilled. So happy for them. And then she comes back and says, I just Googled IMDb's highest rated movie, and it's The Shawshank Redemption, which is a 9.3. Well earned. And then some shows have episodes that are above a 9.5, including Breaking Bad and Game of Thrones. So this episode is an excellent company.
Yeah, it's in the elite.
Yeah, it's prestige TV. Actually,
except for it's only a 4.5 from Kurt.
I was like, is that good? I couldn't figure you out because I figured
he's giving me the finger, folks.
Yes, he is.
And I deserve it because I'm just a jerk.
No, that was good. That was well played.
Okay, last piece of feedback, Kirk.
All right. Angie writes, I'm getting aggravated that it takes Loki so long to use his powers in the different timelines. Why did he let Renslayer hold the prototype pruner over Mr. Timely for so long? They seem like they're strategic as to when they use their powers.
Yeah, because he would have just like
I know
telekinesis that away like he did with that remote control last week.
Or what about the guy he made disappear and show up inside the cage?
How did he? Why make didn't he him just disappear? Do
that? Why didn't he? Because he's that got that power. Why didn't he just make Ravonna disappear?
Right. You know?
Writing.
Right.
Well, it's not. It's just this is part of part of the challenge when watching superheroes, movies. They have superpowers, but then they can't always use them or else
there'd be no drama when they were around mortals.
There'd be no story. It's why I don't read Superman, so all the DC listeners, I'm so sorry. But he's invulnerable. I mean, what good is a character that's invulnerable? You can't hurt them. You can't. A superhero, that to me is pointless.
Well, on that positive note, we're going to wrap this thing up.
Sorry, guys.
No, I think that's great that you hate Superman.
Oh, shit. Now we're going to get Superman.
All five DC people will be up in arms. Okay.
You think there's five people that listen? I think there's Samantha, Janet, Angie, and Kathy. I think that's
and
it.
Rinaldi, but he didn't listen this week. Noticed.
Yeah. Well, I don't think
Rinaldi sent us an email. I just saw his message on Facebook, but Jason hasn't sent it to me yet. So Rinaldi, we're so sorry, but you didn't get read, and that would be Jason.
Sorry, Rinaldi.
Yeah, he's at the meetup with all the others.
Yeah.
So who knows?
All in Boston.
We got to double up. Send us two for next week.
I can't wait. If you want to leave us feedback, please reach out to us at podcastica.com where you can record a voicemail, write your thoughts. You can also email us at talk@podcastica.com and you can send a voicemail as well. So if you want to as well, you can go on to our Facebook page and leave messages and all sorts of good sweet nothings for Sydney and Kirk.
I want a sweet something.
You are a sweet something.
Yeah, I want a sweet something.
What else are you guys watching these days?
I started watching Tulsa Kings this week, and I kind of think it's funny and kind of clever.
It's awesome.
Awesome. I'm enjoying
that. That's the that. One with Rocky,
Sylvester
right?
Stallone. Yeah. It's awesome.
I mean, it's just, I don't know how long I'm going to like it. I'm only on like episode 1.5.
No, the whole season is great. It's awesome.
I don't know if it's going to keep that allure of it being just like novel that this gangsters in Tulsa. That's
no, it's hooked. Really great. It's really great. Okay. I love it. I can't wait for season 2.
Cool.
Wow.
So what about you, Kirk?
I've been watching that show, the Apple show Invasion.
Okay.
That's about alien invasion. That's been really wild. It's been different than any other invasion type alien invasion type storyline. I'm enjoying it a lot.
Have you guys watched Daryl Dixon?
I watched the entire Daryl Dixon. I loved it.
I liked it a lot.
I don't want to aggravate anybody that's a Carol fan, but I'm a little bit disconcerted that she's coming back and going to be a main character next season. I'm just liking him being transported away from the old, you know, Walking Dead universe in a whole new world, a whole new cast, and we get focused on him. So it's been great.
Hopefully by the time this is edited, next week, I think Fear starts.
Yay.
Yeah, I got not a lot of interest in that.
You know what? I'm a hate watcher of Fear.
Oh, okay, cool.
I just want to see how it ends. Like, I want to complete this thing.
Yeah.
And I want to see how bad they can screw it up.
On a roundtable rant last.
Yeah, we've done
the first
a couple
half
of
this.
Rants.
It was really fun to be on, so I'll watch it if Jason invites me on.
Yeah,
I know there's been a lot of good shows that are coming out, even though there is a writer strike, but you know, they had talks and then Brand Dresser said something and then the big wigs went away from the table. So hopefully we're gonna start.
What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I didn't hear anything about that.
No, they were having talks and then they kind of broke down.
It was because of something Fran Drescher said.
No, I'm saying
Fran Drescher. What have anything to do with Fran Drescher?
Well, she's the head of the union.
Yeah.
No, Fran Drescher is the head of the union.
Yeah, but what could she possibly... Vocal. Yeah, but what could she say? That,
no, I mean, I just think that she's doing a great job for the union to stand up. And they had a preliminary deal, and now... A couple of days ago, they said that they're still in the process of working stuff out, and it's just going to delay stuff.
I heard they offered some horrible, like 2%.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Increase of some crap, and you know, I think the big issue is the AI use of actors and actors' voices and stuff.
It's all about missed minutes,
and then also streaming. I think the income, traditionally actors would live on the income they made from residuals. Repeats of the shows that they did. And with streaming, you get a one shot, you get one payment, and then that's it. And that thing can play forever. And you don't get time.
To millions of people. Right?
Yeah. And it's just not right. You know?
So that AI thing in my egotistical mind could affect me because my son and I were extras on the season finale of The Righteous Gemstones on HBO.
Oh my God.
I know. So they could, I guess, the articles I read, take the likeness from their extras and then just perpetuate them.
My podcast partner on the Fromcast, Lizzie, got scanned. And a lot of people, a lot of her friends got scanned and they were going to reuse them. And that's
the
whole thing.
Did they physically do something? They didn't like physically scan her face or something?
They scan you.
They put you in a suit with the little dots on it, and then they scan you.
Well, no, they can also just take your likeness. Yeah, it's
that's what I'm asking. Is there a difference between me just filming background? And
no, they're gonna probe you, and then you're gonna have.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if they can just take it from already shot film, and also put it into an AI, and then I think they can, because I think the goal is they eliminate the need to pay extras.
That's the whole goal.
Right. So they've built a library of extras and then slowly be able to eliminate the need for paying for that.
Do you think I would have had to have signed something for this if it
Well, if they were going to take my face. You sign away the right for them to do anything they want with that imagery. And so now they're saying they want to also take that imagery and clone it into other movies.
See, and this is the thing. James Earl Jones got paid a shit ton of money for his voice.
Yeah, as he should.
He should. He's going to always be the voice of Darth Vader.
Darth Vader, Jesus Christ.
But my point being is, why should he get paid a shit ton of money and Joe Blow, who's just trying to make a living, not get paid? That's the bottom line. But anyway, I think we've solved that.
They didn't know when they filmed Star Wars that Darth Vader would become what Darth Vader became. Oh,
absolutely. No.
So if they did clone, if they did, you know, right, if he did sign away his right to that, you know, voice, and they were then cloning it, they'd been making all of this, having all of this success, and he would have got nothing.
Right.
You know, the only reason he got it was because they agreed to pay him every time they used it. They didn't know that was going to cost them a lot of money at the time. They, you know what I mean? But crazy.
The bottom
hours.
Line is that's why we have Loki. You know, these are all a bunch of disgruntled workers that are variants, and all they want is their right to party. So on that note, thank you guys for listening. And my name is Alex.
I'm Sydney.
And I'm Kirk.
For all time.
For always.
Always.
Good job. That's the last
Glad
time.
We figured that out. See ya.
Bye.
Six months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.